The following is a Castwave Studios production.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello, hello. Welcome to Boldly Going Nowhere, Season 6, Episode 11. The Super Bowl. We have the results from the Super Bowl. We all watched it. We'll talk about trailers and how some team lost. I don't know. I think it was Patriots.
No!
And Deadpool 2 trailer, new Deadpool 2 trailer dropped. It was amazing. And also, we have Jason from Flying V.
So you left yourself a little short there, Sean.
You know, I didn't. I'm not gonna. You know, we all know it's Boldly Going Nowhere.
Yes,
it's right there on the corner of your shirt.
That's true.
Right
that's
here.
True. Yeah. See it.
Right
I
there.
See it because I have a monitor.
Yeah.
Welcome to Boldly Going Nowhere. It's a podcast. You listen to it with your ears.
Ears.
Yep. And here we are, post Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I. Actually, okay, and we were talking about this before the show started. Dallas.
Hi, Dallas.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I don't think people can see me, but I'm here.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We know you're here.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But, Dallas, I know you're heartbroken.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But
I got to admit, they played a great game of football.
Yeah, I enjoy close games. No matter, you know, who I'm rooting for, as long as it's close. And, you know,
as long as it's a great game of football,
it's just a great game. And it's a Super Bowl, you know? So.
And it's a Super Bowl.
I mean, I think what's really important is that both teams had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's an interesting. They all get a participation trophy.
Indeed.
There's an interesting statistic now. Your team and my team actually share the most number of losses in the Super Bowl.
Oh, right.
You're tied at what, 6?
At 5.
Oh, 5.
Oh, wow.
Go Broncos. All right. We lost.
They're in the record books for something. Yay.
Yay.
Anyway, so again, the first part of the episode is going to be talking about the Super Bowl, but obviously we have Dallas White on as a guest. Once again, Dallas, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We also have another guest who those of you who are watching the video compendium of this episode can see. This is Jason Schlafstein of Flying V. Jason, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's not a problem. We had the pleasure of interviewing John Rubin at AwesomeCon last year about your show Brother Mario, and we wanted to bring you on because you told us about a new show that's coming up, and we're going to go over that in the second half of the episode. But I got to admit, I am always excited to hear about the new stuff you guys are putting out because when John came by our table and we were like, yeah, we're a podcast company, you know, we're kind of, you know, under the radar right now, but you know, we're always looking to, you know, expand out. And then John explained what you guys were doing. I was like, wow, okay, so you guys are for real. you guys are legit. We're on the fringe. You guys are like really legit.
No, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't trust anything John says. that's how I've gotten this far.
Okay, fair enough.
You've heard it here first, people.
Hey, buddy. No, he's wonderful. And no, when he was describing you guys, when you were describing Castwave just a few minutes ago, I mean, there's so much connection here. You talked about it as being sort of podcasts and audios for the nerd community and that sort of geek culture. And Flying V extends beyond that. But a huge part of what we do is creating theater for people who don't think theater is for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes a lot of pop culture elements.
Mm-hmm.
We go a little beyond just the geek culture, though it's a huge part of what we do. Part of it is me very consciously making sure that there's influences and people creating that's not just me, so it's not just dudes in basement theater, because it could totally become that.
It's just good
like
name.
All of my stuff would just be like, it's wrestling meets Canadian indie rock.
And you've just sold a ticket, sir.
Right, exactly. And don't get me wrong, we do a lot of that too. But then we also do stuff like we did a show called Lobster Alice that was a mashup of Salvador Dali and Alice in Wonderland. And so we try and keep it just using pop culture as the modern mythologies with which we explore. But I think there's a ton of synergy here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this.
Exactly. And the great thing is that you're talking about bringing, you know, marrying pop culture and theater together to make a product that is, you know, more, I guess, digestible.
To
a larger mass than say one or the other.
Yeah, it's funny. I think we're a niche market in some respects, but we're a niche market that the theater community doesn't tap into.
Right.
That pop culture has massively tapped into right mm-hmm. now in a world where, I mean, in a world where Jessica Jones has a TV show and
right.
Runaways has a TV show.
It's kind of insane how many different, like, you know, almost fringe comic book characters are getting, like, Black Lightning has a TV show.
It's insane. I mean, I have to imagine
nuts.
All of us are roughly the same-ish age or, mm-hmm. or in the same generation. I remember reading Wizard magazine, and there was a whole
Wizard
column that was just about fantasy casting the X-Men because we were never going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man was in limbo hell. There was a Fantastic Four movie you could only buy on VHS at conventions.
I believe James Cameron was actually attached to that Spider-Man movie for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
He owned the rights to it, and then he sold it back to Sony, I believe. Or wait, no, I might have that wrong.
Columbia.
We're at the point now where it's like you used to be, I wonder if we'll ever see Wolverine on screen. And now we've gotten to the point where you're able to be like, well, I'm really disappointed in Iron Fist.
Right.
Like, it's really, this is a bad take on this character that 15 years ago was like, I'd give anything to see Iron Fist on screen.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's just like, you know, back then it was, oh, well, like, wouldn't it be great to see these characters on, you know, the big screen. And now it's like, you know, now you have that dichotomy of, oh, you know, I'm not really a fan of superheroes on the big screen, but on the small screen, the streaming screen, man, yeah. I'm all about that.
Now you have Rant on Demand.
Yeah, Rant on Demand. That's an episode title right there.
Yep.
Rant on Demand. You love it.
I'll type it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. All right. So
it's interesting too, just to extend it just a little bit, because you got people, you know, arguing like, okay, well, the Marvel TV shows, you know, they're good, but are they better than the DC TV shows? And mm-hmm. it's like,
yes.
It's like that's a legitimate conversation now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That could be literally could be its own episode.
Yeah.
A 3-part episode. But I mean, don't get me wrong, I wanna have that discussion at some point.
I do too.
But trust me, it's like almost 8:30, and I honestly don't think I have the energy for
it. I don't
it.
Either. That's a weekend conversation. That's something that we could talk about at intervention.
AwesomeCon.
Yeah.
Well, they'll be at AwesomeCon, which is how we met them at first, and I would love to have more discussions about pop culture since, again, the meat and potatoes of your shows are pop culture married with theater, whereas our show is podcasting about recent trends in pop culture and how it applies to, you know, our age group, so
right.
20 to 30-somethings. So, all right. So, obviously, we'll go through all that, and then we're going to get into – definitely going to get into Flying V and what's coming up with Flying V, because I've heard about this show. I'm super excited about it. So, all right. Let's get the Patriots bashing out of the way first. Okay. No, but seriously.
No,
it was a great game. I am a little – I'll admit the one thing that kept me laughing the entire night was that blown trick pass that Tom Brady did.
And then Eagles doing it, but actually pulling it off, right?
Pulling it off.
As soon as that happened.
So Jason wasn't here for this. So Jason, let me explain. So the last couple of months, anytime there's like a big event, like the Golden Globes or, you know, a big movie premiere coming out, we've been doing a sort of predictions game. And we did the same thing for the Super Bowl. And it was just 3 points. It was, who's going to win? Is it going to be a blowout or a close game? And is the halftime show going to suck? Because, you know, you have too many points to keep track of. It just honestly becomes just, you know, like.
Not fun.
It's not as fun.
Well, I just have to find out then. How'd you all do?
So let's see. I think it was. So Eagles won the game. So I was right on that.
So you three.
Sean was right on that. And then you two were wrong.
Oh.
So that's.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, he called the Patriots on
because,
that.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want them to win.
I love how he's backpedaling at this point.
I was about to say, literally hear the backpedal with every stutter.
I don't think I was.
Who do you think you are trying to do that impersonation in front of me?
Exactly. So,
but no, it's like.
I understand where you're coming from with that because you were like, it's a foregone conclusion. They're going
right.
to win.
And I'm like, well, they've played the Eagles before and they won then. What? Why wouldn't I expect them to win now?
He just felt bad because it would have been 3-for-1 if he went for the Eagles. So he just went with mine.
No, I wouldn't have cared. It's just like, I honestly just thought that the Patriots were going to like somehow squeak it out. But yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, but you're just like, yeah, so it's one Sean and I are one up one. Then it was it going to be a close game or was it going to be a blowout? I think everybody with the exception, again, of Brian picked it to be a close game. Mm-hmm. And Brian said it was going to be a blowout for the Patriots.
You're not doing very good right now.
No, I'm not.
No, he's not.
I am in the red.
You are. Like,
just so you know.
Before we go on, do you have any thoughts from way behind?
I am ashamed of myself, and I'm sorry.
I mean,
I love you, Mom.
The good news is, and there is an upside to this. So, the past predictions games have all had a punishment component to them, and luckily we didn't name one. So, the good news is, if you lose, you're not going to get stuck with a Bean Boozled shake.
Oh,
so,
God,
I'm sorry. What?
Okay. So, all right. So for those of you who haven't heard of this before, and obviously you haven't heard of it. So, are you familiar with the Jelly Belly product Bean Boozled?
No.
Okay. So it's a box.
Terrifying.
It is. It's a box of jelly beans, and they all are different colors. And there's a spinner that will tell you what flavor each individual one is, but it's one of two flavors, right? So like, there's a brown one. It's chocolate pudding or dog food. There's a pinkish one. It's
like Bernie Bott's Every Flavor Beans from Harry Potter, but with a nice spinny game component.
It's like playing Russian roulette with your taste buds.
Yeah, that's a very good.
You go around the table and you just watch people.
You flick, you eat one, and it's either bad or good.
And you can tell.
Most of the time, it's bad.
So our first predictions game of the year, it was the loser had to basically take a box of Bean Boozled, just dump the jelly beans, and make a milkshake out of them.
It would have been really bad.
Well, we haven't done it yet because it's a truly horrifying prospect.
I don't want to do it.
Well, you lost, so you have to do it.
I don't want to do it. Do you want to tell them why you're doing one though?
No, but I also have to do it because I unfortunately let the couple of major plot points for Star Wars Online.
I think you
by mistake.
Just, I think,
so
I think you guys should just pick.
Yeah, it's cardinal sin.
It's cardinal sin, but he
spoiled like the entire movie.
Did not.
All right. So here's the real thing, though. So both of you have to do this Bean Boozled shake.
Yep.
Then here's what really should happen: some sort of final competition, Double or Nothing.
Ooh.
Where one of you gets to escape the fate, and the other one has to do that plus something even worse as well.
Ooh.
Double or Nothing Bean Boozled escape challenge.
See. This is why it's great to bring guests on, because they always think of better things than we can.
Because we suck.
No, but no. So I'm definitely down with this. Okay, you know what we should do? We should do that at AwesomeCon. That should be like one of the things we do while at AwesomeCon. Like, that.
I mean, what the hell are we gonna do?
Oh, we'll come up with something.
Okay,
it'll be a tiebreaker. We'll do it at AwesomeCon and we'll film it and we'll make a whole big show out of it.
Because if it's gonna be like a race or something, then.
I'm pretty sure we're both losers in that case.
It's at AwesomeCon, you said.
Yeah.
I think it's a scavenger hunt.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh.
Scavenger hunt at AwesomeCon. Certain amount of photos with people. Certain amount of either drops that you guys record for the show. Certain amount of autographs. Pictures with certain people in certain cosplay costumes. You've got to find a Deadpool. You got to find somebody like that. Mm-hmm. You do.
Deep Pity's going to be there. D-Pity's going to be there, so that might definitely be on the list.
Scavenger hunt, loser loses everything. They die.
I could imagine it being like something along the lines of they got to do the Bean Boozled shake, then they got to take an ice bath or something like that. Oh, that would suck.
Drink the Bean Boozled while in an ice bath?
Oh, equally bad.
Oh, no, they got to follow the Bean Boozled shake
with
an Old Bay shot.
Oh man! I know
what Old Bay is, but what's an Old Bay shot?
It's when you fill a shot glass with Old Bay and then kill yourself.
Ew!
It's like the cinnamon challenge, but in Maryland.
It's with Old Bay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's our home-based challenge.
Oh,
that's a Maryland challenge.
As if that person's not already going to be crabby. Then that's going to happen.
I mean, I think you literally should do it now because of that pun.
No. Fuck you. Right.
No, but I'll take that. Double or Nothing. Awesome con. You and me. We're going to get this on camera? Handshake? All right, here we go.
Stand up.
I'm not going to be on camera if I stand up. All right.
I saw it.
It's on camera.
It's
on camera.
Double or Nothing. Bam.
I'll be a man of my word.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right.
But that means that you have to participate.
No, I'm... Yes.
God, okay. This is crazy. I don't know you guys very well, and I just ruined one of your lives.
Oh, yeah. That's okay, though, because this is what we do for our art.
Hello, new friend.
What's up? I'm going to make one friend and one enemy. It's a productive day.
One friend or one frenemy. I don't think they'll hold it against that long. But all right, so obviously – the third – so it was – the first point was – I think it's – so it's 2-2-1-0 yes. Still.
We're going back to – okay.
Yeah, and now it's – the final one was the halftime show. Was it going to suck? I think everybody
said it was going to suck.
I think Dallas said it was going to be good.
It was going to be great.
He thought it was going
to
be great.
All right, so I'm gonna go on record. It was good. It was good. I enjoyed it.
You know what?
I just love the only person who thought that the halftime show was going to be great has your haircut.
That should be the image for us.
Meanwhile.
Yeah.
Like everything. They're like, this is going to be Trump. This is going to be Trump. He's like, Justin Timberlake.
Oh, man. I love him.
No, but okay.
He's amazing.
But here's my thing. It was good. I'm going to say that much. My biggest complaint. I mean, it's not even a complaint.
His wardrobe.
The lead up, everybody was talking about the Prince hologram.
Yes.
Like they were going to do a hologram of Prince. It was going to be a huge deal. And JT pulled it at the last second. They were like, we're not doing the hologram. Apparently, Prince's estate wouldn't approve it. So they just pulled down a big sheet and just projected Prince from Purple Rain on it, which...
It's Dave Chappelle.
It was perfect.
No, it was not Dave Chappelle. I wish it was Dave Chappelle.
That was the meme that went on there.
I mean, oh, I know. It was good.
I have to imagine that Tupac's hologram is hanging out with Prince's hologram somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, popped up on Reddit from this. Was this kid, and he took a selfie...
Yes.
Took a Snapchat. Super Bowl selfie. It was a Snapchat with Justin Timberlake, and it says me and Conor McGregor.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was so funny.
Oh, man.
That's why the halftime show was
good. I mean, here's my thing. It was a good halftime show. I honestly felt that the bit with Prince was probably the best part about it you didn't see it, but like literally at a point – where we got to Prince's bit, they zoom out on the city of Minneapolis and everything lights up purple. Like, I'm not talking just like around the stadium. I mean, like the whole city goes up
That's
purple.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, it's so
that
good.
So they must have went around with like black lights and
you know what? I think they probably just swapped out the bulbs to do that.
Oh yeah. I guess the grid.
So good though.
That was awesome.
So good. The Prince.
So good.
I mean, the rest of it was okay.
So good.
But that kid. As JT's walking away, the kid's trying to get another selfie with him, and he's just like, Super Bowl selfies. I'm like, do not let that become a thing. No. Please, no. Last thing I need in my life is just hashtag Super Bowl. Yes, there it is. That's.
Oh,
Dave Chappelle.
Breakfast can wait.
That's not what actually happened.
That's not what actually happened, but that would have been great.
That's the best error that someone makes.
Yeah.
At the Super Bowl, no one bothered to check the projection.
That would have been amazing.
Because, well, we got to replace the hologram.
And save the bell.
Just go to Google, you know, something off the internet.
Just cover a Breakfast Can Wait. Did you ever see that? So Prince's response to Dave Chappelle's sketch was he took a picture of Dave Chappelle from that sketch and made it the album cover of one of his albums. So it's like literally him holding a plate of pancakes, and it's the album's called
pancakes,
Breakfast Can Wait.
Bitches.
And Dave Chappelle kept joking about it in his stand-up. He was like, how the fuck am I going to beat Prince on this?
You're not.
You make fun of him, he will turn you into a fucking album cover. So good. So... Needless to say, Brian, you lost, and you lost hard. But again, you get a chance to redeem yourself.
I mean, you know what? Here's the thing. I'm a Broncos fan. I kind of already lost pretty hard this season. So
I mean, I'm a Bills fan. So
at least you went to the playoffs this year.
For like one game.
You know, I do have to say something, though, is with the with the halftime show, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
There is two things that I was expecting more of, and usually, you know, the artist would have like a wardrobe change, like in the middle of the performance.
You were just hoping his nipple popped out, right?
I was so hoping. Oh well. But anyway,
like a reverse,
reverse Janet Jackson.
Yeah, there was
I got the
wardrobe thing, and then there's also the special guest aside from the Prince tribute. But they usually have somebody else come out.
Oh yeah, and a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people were expecting members of NSYNC,
yeah,
Katy Perry,
yeah, absolutely,
Janet.
I feel like you managed to highlight exactly what the rules for him were, though. Like they're probably like, all right, JT, you can come back, and nothing with clothes or anybody else.
That does
make
sense.
You're going to be on stage automate completely alone, automate and if you go near any buttons, we are shutting this thing down.
True.
Right
we have,
now.
We have a kill switch right fucking here.
We have a picture of Dave Chappelle as Prince.
We see you so much as go, beep, boop. Nope, done.
Yeah. No, that's good. All right, so yeah, so predictions game, I think Sean and I tied up at 2 apiece.
Whatever.
So, yeah.
Yeah, us three.
Yeah. Oh, wait, did you get – yeah, you got two. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a three-way tie.
Three-way tie.
Three-way tie, and Brian loses.
All right, so now it's us three next time we do a pronoun.
It's elimination.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, so, all right, a lot of trailers dropped last night. So, first – all right, so, Jason, have you been following Deadpool 2 at all?
Yes and no, because now I feel like I'm going to say yes, but I'm not going to know anything that you're
going
to know.
No, it's okay. So, I mean, so Deadpool 2 is coming out.
I know it's coming out. I know Cable's there.
So this trailer is Cable's first appearance in film.
Oh, exciting.
Like, first footage of him. And I don't know. Can we pull it up? I think we – have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
All
I'm
right.
happy to watch it, but
me
I tend
neither.
To avoid all trailers of anything I know I'm going to see. All
right, so do
you yeah, want – Yeah, I think I'm in agreement. I'm in agreement.
Have you not seen it?
I haven't seen it, but I kind of want to leave it to.
Okay, well, we can leave it to.
I
fate.
Think we should leave it to surprise
sure.
because watching a trailer, watching a trailer is not really good entertainment.
Did you see the promotional image though? Because that was great with him with the chair and the bullets. It's sort of this like
flash dance
kind of thing.
Yep.
Well, I gotta look up Deadpool poster. That's just that still image.
I mean, all the promotional. I mean, I remember the first Deadpool film. The promotional campaign was so good.
I still love the fact that it was like
yeah that's so good
that the first movie they advertised it like it was a
romantic comedy
for Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, hey babe, let's go see Deadpool. Oh, okay.
And
it's and like
that photo is great, by the way. It's
like a chorus line of bullets.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like what was that the Wolf. Image from Ricky Martin or whatever.
Ricky Martin
was it Ricky Martin or was it what. What was that from?
That was from
Flash
like
Dance.
Flash Dance or
Flash Dance. She's a stripper. She pulls a bucket.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Ricky Martin. What?
I don't know. I remember
Ricky Martin videos are you watching?
You just know more about Ricky Martin than the rest
of us,
clearly.
I know way more.
That's a point.
I feel like that video might be on par.
Oh, yeah. So like there was the – what is it? Here, go back down, Sean.
Yeah.
There's that Good Housekeeping where they brought Deadpool in for the cover. Those were actually on sale. I do love that.
How to be a holiday supper hero.
You'll go crazy for D's nuts.
Wow, that's really on Good Housekeeping.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was an actual episode. I mean, episode. It was an actual issue. I wish them.
I'm hoping for this movie that somehow, some way, they get a cameo from Betty White. Because that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that, you know, B. Arthur's dead, and that's who Deadpool just, like, crushes on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it would just be great to get, like, some kind of Golden Girl reference in the second movie.
I mean, yeah. It's...
Not to backtrack or anything, but I was expecting Betty White to make, like, an appearance in a commercial for the Super Bowl, but we won't get back to that. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, it is a bit of a bummer. She
wasn't
in a commercial this year, but... Yeah. I mean, she's like
the Snickers. Did she do the Snickers commercial?
Like
the football?
Oh god, that was like
or that was
two,
like 3 years,
2-3 years
that
ago.
That was a while ago. Dude.
Oh, it was a while ago.
So
excitement about Deadpool 2, and then we also got another. Oh god, there's so many trailers.
Jessica Jones season two.
I mean, I don't know. It's after the Defenders. I'm kind of. I don't know if I'm worn out on DC Netflix. I mean, not DC Netflix. Marvel Netflix series. Jesus Christ. I just heard a thousand nerds start rage typing.
Yeah! Did you watch?
Excuse me.
Punisher? Or?
Oh, yeah. I watched Punisher. I watched Defender. I actually watched Punisher first, then watched Defenders.
Gotcha.
Just because I was like, I was excited, but I was like, I really want to watch Punisher solo series first and then go back to the Defenders. And I liked the Defenders. It's just, I don't know. I think the fumble they made with Iron Fist, or I'm sorry, not it, you know, it wasn't a fumble. It was just they could have done better.
It was a fumble.
All right. So, okay. I was trying to be nice, but yeah, you're right. It's a fumble.
Sort of a debacle.
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing was, it's just, and then going through that whole series and, like, Danny's just continuing to be a schmuck. It's just, it's so dumb.
It's a bold choice to make your main character unlikable.
Yeah.
Just
really unlikable. And it's like you got all these other great characters that we fell in love with, Jessica Jones and Matt Murdock and Luke Cage, but then you make Danny the focal point of the series. Why would you do that?
That's really disappointing. I was so excited when they announced the whole project, and I was very excited for all four of them. I thought it was super smart. It made a ton of sense. But the one I was waiting for the whole time was Iron Fist.
Oh, no.
Like, I cannot believe we're going to finally get Iron Fist. It's going to be last. We're going to build up to it. They're doing so good. Daredevil, I thought, was good. Jessica Jones was great, and Luke Cage was really great until the end, but it was still really great, and they're gonna have worked out all the kinks, and oh no, why did they...
No, they fucked up.
I'm Danny Rand.
I almost feel like if you want to watch a good Iron Fist show right now, your best consolation might be watching season one of Arrow. Rich white guy gets, you know, stranded on an island and trains to become better. I don't know.
I mean,
just saying. I mean, Mako's green.
Yeah. Know? Well, I think Iron Fist has been in a couple of animated series, and maybe not his origin story, but I know.
No, he was. They were on Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which was friggin' great.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a couple of animated movies, but Marvel's animated movies tend not to be quite as good as DC's, in my opinion.
I agree completely.
Mm-hmm. So there's that.
So hopefully, you know, they'll redirect Danny Rand, you know, to be better, but I'm not gonna hold my breath.
At least they've backed away from the Inhumans. We can stop trying to make that happen.
Yay! I talked about that last week on the show.
Yes, I am happy about
that. Oh my god.
Big dog.
X-Men be my jam, and it's just like, come on, stop.
It's also so disappointing because they were trying so hard to make them the X-Men when you have the you can do the Inhumans. They're never going to be as big as the X-Men. They're not the same metaphor. They're not what behind it. But if you're like, hey, it's like Game of Thrones with aliens, that's a great pitch that is the actual Inhumans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Here's family fighting and infighting and intrigue and prophecies and ancient warriors and stuff like that. But instead it was like, ah, we don't have the X-Men. Now they do. So we can stop trying to make the Inhumans happen.
Yes. Yay. And then maybe, you know, 10 years down the line, somebody will take a look at the Inhumans and be like, hey, you know what? They're not making Game of Thrones anymore. That just ended. I think we're good. I think enough time has passed. They might do that in space.
I don't know.
It'd be interesting.
It's weird because the Inhumans is one of those series that's like I kind of equate them in the same regard as the Guardians of the Galaxy in that they were a largely unfamiliar franchise. They were this franchise that not a lot of people really knew much about, or they weren't really talked about much. But the thing is, you were able to make Guardians like the biggest freaking thing in the world, whereas the Inhumans, you know, it was mishandled.
Yes.
And it was... I know that every time I, you know, like every time I sneezed when I picked up like a Marvel book or something, I was getting Inhumans crammed down my throat. And I was just like, I really don't care at all. And it was even more frustrating when they were, you know, cutting X-Men books and they were cutting Fantastic Four books and they were doing all this crap because, oh, we don't own the rights to them. But here's the Inhumans. And I'm like, you're literally pushing a product on me that I have never asked for, nor do I ever want.
And it also doesn't serve the same metaphors.
Right.
Each of these characters are built around a core iconic metaphor, and the Inhumans are not a metaphor for social groups the way that
social injustices
exactly
and,
that's not
you know,
what they are, and they're not a metaphor for the pioneering creative, you know, exploration of the human spirit like the Fantastic Four are in terms of a family. They are mainly side characters who have worked best always when it's about political machinations in their sort of separate nation state.
Right.
And so they're not going to be able to take the place of representatives of our population or the heart and soul of the universe. That is just not what these characters are built for. Guardians of the Galaxy work because you put them in space and let them be their own thing and allow them their own cave to work within. Mm-hmm. Trying to shove the Inhumans into the larger context doesn't work as much as carving out their own space to develop and then weaving them into the tapestry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's as much flack as we gave, because on this show we trashed Inhumans because mm-hmm. we were just like, look, we get it. You wanted to make X-Men. This is the only thing you've got.
Yep.
Please stop trying to make X-Men, okay? Like, we want you to get X-Men, but please don't try to make a lame version of X-Men with these characters.
Because okay? All we really want is X-Men.
Yeah, it's
you know,
whatever you do, it's not going to be anywhere near as good, and you're just going to make us want the thing even more. So please stop.
Yep.
And they were like, you know what? Let's just go back to Fox and offer them more money because, you know, they're going to keep making bad X-Men movies, and eventually they're just going to be like, you know what? This isn't worth it anymore. And lo and behold,
yeah,
and that whole thing kind of blew up in their face when it was like, oh hey, look, Deadpool's not only made a lot of money, but it's also really good. Mm-hmm. So whoops,
but. I mean, well, and we'll see how they do with the Fox characters once they roll into that rotation, but
New Mutants and all that,
yeah. So I think that was all the major trailers that came out.
There is news that we're getting a Venom trailer tomorrow. Tom Hardy playing Venom. And they actually released the official poster, like a teaser poster.
Looks cool.
It looks awesome. They used the right logo. And the eyes look like, you know, like, because it's all it is a black image with, like, Tom Hardy is Venom. Mm-hmm. And they've used the Venom logo that, you know, you're synonymous with. And... eyes look very, very spot on, but I'm like, okay, cool. I actually want to see what Venom looks like.
But Brian, where will Spider-Man be?
I don't know where the Spider-Mans will be.
How you make a Venom movie without the Spider-Mans?
I was about to ask, is this at all related to the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or is this totally in its own separate pocket at this point?
Apparently yes and no, in that it relates to Spider-Man Homecoming somehow, some way, but at the same time, it's going to be removed from the larger events of the MCU, which I think sucks because...
So imagine, this is going to be a relegated, a individual event mm-hmm. that we technically are counting within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but once it's over, we're never going to mention it again.
Pretty much, which sucks because it would be awesome to get Agent Venom with the Guardians sometime, but what are you going to do?
I just don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I mean, we've been hyped for a Venom movie for God knows how long.
Yeah,
you know they've been. I mean, I was gonna say. I mean, enthusiasm dwindled after Spider-Man 3.
Sure. Yeah. I just think.
What was wrong with that?
It's one of those things where with the Marvel Universe.
I will hurt you, Sean. I will hurt you.
What did you do?
He's just like, what was wrong with Spider-Man 3?
I meant that jokingly, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't.
Like, what was wrong with that? No. I was a perfect
no, but
piece of crap.
Listen, it was better than the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, yeah. I'll agree.
Like,
I'll agree.
If they could do a fan edit to just get rid of that scene in the when he's dancing in the middle of downtown, I think I could.
I think like all the Sandman scenes are wonderful.
The Sandman scenes are great in that movie, but it's like. You know, Mary Jane dumps him on the bridge, and he's just I'm like, oh my fucking god, are you kidding?
I think the biggest problem is they never address them. I'm not even gonna go into that argument.
Yeah,
I always say that the true main villain of Spider-Man 3 wasn't the Sandman, it wasn't Harry, it wasn't it was Mary Jane. Mary Jane was the true villain of that movie.
I don't remember the movie well enough to be able to make that comment.
I'll talk to you about it off air because that's a long ass discussion. But, Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah, that dropped like
out of
Super
nowhere
Bowl Sunday.
So Cloverfield Paradox, which is the sequel film to 10 Cloverfield Lane, dropped on Netflix. Like, the trailer dropped during the game. And then, like, literally, as that commercial went off the air and then went back to the game, Netflix immediately tweeted, Cloverfield Paradox will be available as soon as the game's over. Like, you can go on Netflix right now and watch the sequel film. It's not a commercial release. You can go watch it on Netflix right now.
Was the original on Netflix? Was that a Netflix
film?
No.
That was just a movie.
Cloverfield was its own thing, and then 10 Cloverfield Lane
was a movie.
That was a theatrical release, okay. And then this is a pseudo sequel
like
to 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Was 10 Cloverfield Lane the one with John Goodman and
yes.
Natalie Portman?
Okay. Yes,
it was Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yes, thank you.
Ramona Flowers, yeah.
Tom Cruise is back.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah, Mission Impossible 6. That's another, yeah, so that's a, why?
I don't know.
I mean, what was the fifth one? Ghost Protocol? No, there was another one after that.
Skyscraper. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, I do want to talk about Skyscraper.
You mean, yes. You mean Die Hard?
Let's talk about another Tower movie.
I just want to point this out. Okay, have you seen the trailer for Skyscraper?
No.
Okay.
What is Skyscraper?
It's a Dwayne the Rock Johnson movie.
A Dwayne the Rock Johnson
wavelength, right? This movie, all right, so when Brian and I were watching this commercial when it was playing during the Super Bowl, we both looked at this, and it seemed like they were rebooting Die Hard. That's what this looked like.
Yeah. Right.
And then, like, as we went along, it was like, okay, maybe not remaking Die Hard, but it's a movie, like, along those that vein.
I mean, the building looks like Nakatomi Plaza, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks straight up like it, and, like, he's grabbing that hose, and he's jumping out of a window, and I'm like...
That's like straight up Die Hard.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This looks like it almost to me seems like they're remaking Die Hard, but they don't want to piss people off, like me off. So they're just like, Skyscraper.
Well, and
let's just call it that.
Well, interestingly, I mean, we were hoping it wouldn't fall under the sort of trend that they've just been rebooting classic 70s and 80s franchises. Like they're rebooting Death Wish with Bruce Willis
and The Crow with Jason Momoa.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Fascinating.
I mean, to be fair, I could get behind that. Mm-hmm. Jason Momoa is pretty
you think,
beast.
You think
I mean, maybe not Redneck Aquaman was so great, but...
You think in Skyscraper they're going to play...
Got a bat suit. I dig it.
They're going to play Demi Lovato's Skyscraper in the movie.
You were just... How long were you sitting on that?
No, I wasn't.
Dallas, you are a weird little man, but I love you.
Was that Toy Story? You are a weird little man.
You are sans strange little man, oh, and you have right. my pity. No, but so – well, and the other thing, it's very action-oriented, and The Rock's got prosthetic limbs. Like he's got prosthetic legs.
Yeah, he's got like a – like
there's a scene in the trailer where –
The Rock needs enhancement. That's the point that they're making.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's a scene in there where, like, he's literally punched his legs into, like, the side of the building and is, like, hanging off. And you just see the legs start to, like, sort of... And he's just like, oh! I'm just like... It's just... And the other thing was we were talking about... And Brian and I immediately talked about this after that commercial was finished. We were like, so many movies based in high-rises. Why?
Yeah.
Can't you find another location to shoot your movie?
Like before I knew what the title of this movie was, I was like, man, this Jumanji sequel looks dark.
At least they didn't play Welcome to the Jungle.
They are making a sequel, though.
No!
They are making a sequel. Because Jumanji 2.
Really well.
I mean, technically Jumanji 3, but okay.
They could have played a Creed song, you know?
When you have a $100 million budget and you make almost $900 million... Then, yeah.
Wait, the Jumanji movie made $900 million?
It made gangbusters over the Christmas holiday,
dude.
Yeah.
Massive.
It made
nine
all kinds of money.
Times its budget.
And I kind of contributed to that. I'm sorry. I went to go see it with my parents.
Well, how do you contribute? I have MoviePass, so.
How is that?
Oh, you got to get it.
Is it really as good as it's
Here we go.
$10 a month, and you can watch a movie every night for unlimited. And until you run out of movies, and then you can watch them again.
Castwave Studios is in no way affiliated with MoviePass.
We wish we were. MoviePass, get at us.
I'll probably go see a movie after this.
Oh, good God. 300 what?
Yeah, it's $10 million gross.
Almost
11.
What the fuck?
I love this website.
Is that just this week? That's just this week.
Wait, what is that?
This is
Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
This is the weekend of
Jumanji made $10 million this week.
It's still the number one movie.
Oh, yeah.
Why? I don't know.
Because the next movie is Maze Runner.
The Death Cure.
Oh. Hey, okay, that explains it.
Peter Rabbit this weekend.
No.
It's going to be good.
No. Just Dallas, look at me.
What?
Look at me, Dallas.
Oh, hey, but Star Wars is still going. Star Wars is still going.
Just no.
No.
No. All right, so I think that – we did have one more topic before the break.
we have a break. Oh, that's right.
Yes, we do. You always put that in there.
I do.
Yep. So the Wii's Virtual Console is officially being shut down.
Yeah, I have the details here. So the Wii obviously launched feels like a lifetime ago. And since then, they've had the Wii U and the Switch. And I personally really enjoy having my virtual console on my Wii because it means that I have a library to go back to whenever. But basically, what's happening is they're shutting down the option to add points in March of this year. So next month, to actually add points to your account. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that they're shutting down the shop, because they're shutting down the shop in January 2019. But you have until like March 29th, I believe, is the date to actually add funds to your account to be able to spend them on games. Now, the problem is there's actually like 17 games that are exclusive to the virtual console that once they're gone, it's almost I looked at it, it's like these games are really hard to get. Mm-hmm. When they're not on the virtual console. So I'm actually going to try and stock up on some stuff and try and get as many virtual console games as I can, you know, without blowing my wad.
Yeah, get them exclusives.
But it just, I don't know. I kind of wanted to ask around the table, like, what do you think of this? Because
it's like a 10-year-old system.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing.
Is it for the Wii and the Wii U, or just the
it's
Wii?
It's just the Wii. Okay.
Well, the here's the thing about the Wii. You can jailbreak that so easily.
That's true.
Because, you know, the warranty's over.
Well, yeah.
So if you're worried about that,
there was a warranty.
That's over. Yeah, I jailbroke mine, and, like, I can put a bunch of games on there. And
that is true.
I just have to put some ROM files. And your NES mini controllers and the SNES mini controllers plug into the Wiimote,
yep,
and it works.
That's true.
Well, it sort of rehashes that same question. It's just because,
well, here's the problem is that the Switch has not announced their virtual console.
They're not going to do virtual console.
I keep hearing that, but I honestly think that, like, they got to be doing something with the virtual console. They haven't lost their online service. Like, they haven't even lost their online service as of yet.
So what happens is they have that stream service where you pay X dollars per month, and then you can download games and you can play them. It's the same. It's like the equivalent of Netflix for Nintendo.
Right.
But the problem is that that library is extremely limited. They haven't unlocked everything from, say, mm-hmm, what you had on Virtual Console. Like, so you can't pull Sega – I don't think you can pull Sega – like a bulk of Sega titles. I don't think you can pull so it's basically – it's just like they're shutting down this service that people have been using for
years.
Almost a full-on decade at this point.
It's frustrating to me because this basically turns your Wii into a Wii Mini, which if you don't know about that, it was this $99 option that did not have any access to the internet and only read CDs. So basically, it was a neutered Wii. I realize what I just said, by the way. Sorry, but
excuse me.
But still, it just.
Oh no!
All right,
you're putting neutered Wii.
Hashtag neutered Wii.
Okay, thank you.
But
great. That's great. Thanks, Brian. That's our title now.
Thank you. But it's frustrating because, like, I consider myself, you know, definitely more of a collector than, like, say, the average person. I like to collect games. I like to have the option to have multiple games and across multiple platforms. And I just think, you know, it wouldn't hurt them to keep the service open. I know I can understand kind of why they're doing it, because they don't want it to, like, you know, just sit there unused after time, but
that, and, you know, they're probably not making money off of it,
right? But it just, I don't know, I think that, sure, it might be time, but at the same time, I would still argue that there's still reason to keep it open. That's just mm-hmm. me.
All right, well, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna go ahead and take a little bit of a break. You can listen to these commercial considerations, and then we're gonna come back and talk to Jason about what's coming up with Flying V. So stick around.
Salutations und Mutter and Vater. You want to support das Podcast? Simply go to patreon.com/castwavestudios and you can do just that und du megans. Help us in the best way possible and you get und privileges to make your Freunde jealous. Schnell, schnell! Go to und patreon.com/castwavestudios! Well, hello. This is a commercial for CashWaveStudios.com/Amazon. It is the best way to shop for anything on your wish list. Shopping through CashWave Studios is the best way
to help us without paying any extra. Remember, click the Amazon tab at CastWaveStudios.com. This is Casey Kasem saying grab your balls and reach for the stars. American Top
40. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Zach Patterson with CastWave Studios.
And this is Sean Holmes.
And we're here to plug our new movie podcast, Post Credit Podcast. Every episode, Sean, Rocky Diamond, and myself will hit you with movie news, discussion, and movie reviews.
Yeah, we were getting ready to watch a bunch of movies here, so I think we should start up with Batman v Superman, the director cut.
No, Sean, no.
I think it's a highly underrated movie.
No, Sean, no Batman v Superman in this house.
Why not? I don't understand.
Why not? Why yes? What's good about that movie? Nothing is good about that movie. The plot is all over the
you
place.
You can find our
Superman
show
does
at
nothing.
Post-credit
it
podcast
is a movie.
At CastWaveStudios.com. Just click the picture of PCP.
As Lex Luthor, he shoves a Jolly Rancher in a dude's mouth.
All right, do you just want to watch Rogue One?
Oh, hell yeah, I love Rogue One.
My, won't those some wonderful commercial considerations.
Very, they're antiques.
Very
gotta be careful.
Very informative. Yeah, you gotta be careful.
I can sense the insincerity in your voice, Colin. Oh. Don't play me.
Sorry.
Don't play your hate me. Play your hate yourself.
Okay. Sure.
What? Sure, Brian.
I don't know. Anyway.
Don't hate the player. Hate yourself.
There you go.
Hate the game.
Because we know you're not allowed to play.
That was
welcome to Boldly Going Nowhere.
Thank you. Ooh, that's a good one. I'm gonna have to remember that.
Don't hate the player, hate yourself.
Because you weren't invited to play in the first place.
That's a t-shirt right there.
All right.
So Jason,
hello.
Hi. So
hi.
I want to let's talk about Flying V, which again, I love the name because
one of my favorite guitarists, by the way.
See, and you know what? When they first told me the name Flying V, I thought it was one of two things. I was like, okay, this is in my mind, I'm thinking Mighty Ducks or the guitar. And you just told me before we started that it is a Mighty Ducks reference.
It is definitively the Mighty Ducks and definitively not the guitar.
Right.
Explicitly for legal purposes, it's definitively not the guitar.
Okay, cool. Just so we got that on record. So not the guitar.
Yes, it was. But genuinely, it was inspired by – actually, the name came out of a couple different things. It was one that I wanted to do a theater company that sounded – more like a band than a theater company.
Okay.
Two, we're an ensemble-based company. We do a lot of created work, a lot of group-devised work. So when ducks do fly in the sky making the actual Flying V, the way it works is that one of them takes the lead and they switch out because the person in the lead is encountering the most wind resistance. So then as it gets easier as you go back. So it's different people taking control or people, ducks, taking control of that V. So that was sort of a metaphor for the ensemble and the group creation that we do. And we wanted a sort of kitschy 90s reference to be really clear about what
That's
our aesthetic
awesome.
Was. And so we went with Flying V specifically for the Mighty Ducks. It's only ever happened once, but the opening night of our very first show, which was a show called Become What You Are in 2011, before I made the first curtain speech, sort of welcomed everybody and announced everything, the whole audience just started quacking. So it's only ever happened once, but it was right before that very first show, and there was a whole audience that just quacked.
Did it start like very slow, like quack, quack,
pretty much,
quack, and then just built? Oh, it's so great.
I was up on stage. It's still like a really actually deeply emotional moment for me.
That's awesome, man.
I was like, welcome to Flying V! Quack, quack.
Yeah. It just the roar, it just comes up and you're overwhelmed. Oh, I love it. No, because obviously, if you can't tell from this point, this being a pop culture show, 90s, you know, retro stuff, you know, pop culture, it's our jam.
Me too.
So again, when John pitched me the mission statement of your theater company, I was like, I'm 100% invested right now. What do I got to do to hear more about this? And so we had the interview. So – and I've been keeping up, and so one of the reasons you're on today is you wanted to tell us about your new show.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely excited to hear about that. But so for people who aren't familiar with it, so Flying V, tell us a little bit more about what Flying V does.
Sure. So Flying V is your friendly neighborhood indie theater.
We are a pop culture-infused theater whose goal is to try and make you want to live life more. We create almost exclusively original work, and we're centered in the Montgomery County, Maryland area, both Silver Spring and Bethesda. We do both scripted and devised, so that means we do stuff that's traditionally written, or we do a lot of work, particularly our Flying V Fight series, that's more movement and music-based, that's built around the physicality of the performers and telling a lot of stuff through movement theater. Basically, anything formally is on the table for us. It's our aesthetic that's very specific. And everything that makes a Flying V show is what I like to call the intersection of high concept and intimate moments. We're a company that really focuses deeply on the existential nature of the human condition and finding these very personal, intimate stories or character, you know, portrayals, and then setting them up against these big high concepts. So that could be in terms of content. We had a series called The Pirate Laureate of Port Town, which was about a world where poetry has replaced violence as the means of combat on the high seas. And it was this whole big pirate, poetic, kind of Pixar-esque adventure.
Uh-huh.
But the whole story was really about being a child of divorce and the metaphor of the land and the sea. Which part of your life are you really from? And do you have to choose if you're more pirate or poet? Or we had this show called Be Awesome, a theatrical mixtape in the 90s, which was a night of live-action music videos set to 90s songs. So we did stuff to, like, Filters, Take a Picture, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Mariah Carey was in there. And so it was these fun, physical vignettes to each of these songs, but the high concept was that it was actually – so that was the high concept. The intimate moment was that it was a whole story about a guy who at the age of 30 finds out that he has stage 4 brain cancer and he's dying. And he has a wife who's 8 months pregnant, and his daughter is someone he's never going to get a chance to meet. So the whole play is actually him making a mixtape to leave for her, and each of these songs – are chronologically these important moments in his life. So you have everything from things as silly as we did to Mariah Carey's Hero. It was all of his childhood love. So it was like The Rock and Mankind wrestling against each other and Batman versus the Joker and Carmen Sandiego and all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then you had things that were far more complicated. So there was a piece set to Bjork's Hyper Ballad that was about his father accidentally committing suicide when he was very young, playing a game of Russian roulette because he was a junkie of sort of experiences and who couldn't handle being settled down. Or we had a piece set to Ben Folds' Brick that was all about he and his girlfriend waiting in the waiting room for her to have her appointment to have an abortion after college and just what that experience did to their relationship, just the two of them sitting in a waiting room for 3 minutes. And we had, you know, I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men. And suddenly it was like
right.
a bunch of people having their first sexual experience, including that cover.
Right, sure.
So it was this exploration of the 90s. It was this exploration of a relationship to death and parenting and also how you tell your story through music, if music is the language that you speak through your life experiences. So all of that melded together. So that's the kind of work that we do where we take these pop culture ideas, we take these cultural touchstones or what we call modern mythologies, these things that are really personal to us that has resonance to the larger world, but at the same time they're always just the lens by which we're trying to explore something deeply personal and deeply intimate and diving into the nature of what makes us human.
So I got to ask the question. So, I mean, obviously each of these, I mean, these stories, like you said, takes a genuinely universally accepted piece of pop culture and then sort of melds it into this, you know, very emotional, very intense experience to make it – again, to make it more, you know – what's the term?
Diverse.
I
literally was?
To make it more manageable across the board for everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's opening a door. It's an entryway. It's a lens and it's for me, it's what makes us different. There's a lot of different theater companies in D.C. We have a home to, at any given point, between 80 and 100 professional theater companies. So if you're going to do one on top of that, you have to be doing something that's different. I, as a theater artist, love lots of different kinds of theater. And honestly, are we allowed to curse on this show? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Great. Knock yourself out.
So, like, I would love to do, just as Jason, the director, shows that are searing relationship dramas, four-piece relationship dramas where, like, people hate each other so much they have to fuck each other. But studio theater in D.C. is going to do that so well. So I'd love for them to hire me to do that. But my company doesn't need to do that. So for us, it's very specifically that there's a whole group of people who probably might not even realize that theater can extend past the traditional kind of stigma of either being the Great American Musical or Shakespeare or a stuffy thing that you saw mm-hmm. when you were in high school, and instead is a medium that can explore so many different kinds of incredible moments. And my influences personally, in addition to the theatrical craft, are largely professional wrestling, music, and comic books. And so I take elements of like Scott McCloud's understanding comics and his way of thinking about right. iconographic mm-hmm. imagery and language and put that into the theatrical spectrum. Or I think about how professional wrestling uses earned moments of spectacle to create that sort of this is awesome chance. Mm-hmm. And what do I do that would be similar in a theatrical setting to the equivalent of someone going through a table off a ladder that's been built to create the same kind of emotional impact without having to have somebody go off a table. So it's how do I take these other art forms that I love and grew up as a fan, take what makes them work and make them tick, and include that within my theatrical craft.
Can I just say something real fast?
Please. It's your show.
sorry. I just wanted to interject real fast. Just a quick comment. Because I feel like I would have absolutely loved to have something like this in high school.
Yes.
Because I grew up I grew up always wanting to be an actor. And the thing was, when you're in high school and, you know, like, I don't know, drama club was just never my thing because it always just had that stigma. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It always had that. I mean, I was in, like, AV club and stuff like that. But, like, just drama club, like, I don't know, it was just... It just seemed so pretentious and, like, up its own ass, it felt like, mm-hmm. half the time. I would have killed to, like, have a program like this available, like, back in the day. Because, like...
We kind of call ourselves a gateway drug to theater.
Uh-huh.
Where it's that idea that we're meant to be your first experience with it. Uh-huh. Because to show that it can be something different and that right. it can be for... So if you think of this table that we're looking at, audience, imagine that there's a big, beautiful table. And it's, I mean, you can see that it's not, but I was going to set it up. Right.
yeah, I got
it's
you.
A wooden mahogany table.
Yeah. Filled mahogany.
With, and this notebook that I have is everybody currently that goes to see theater in the Washington, D.C. area. Honestly, that's how many people maybe are going right now. I would love this entire table to be filled with people that go to theater, but I don't care if it's 27 different notebooks and none of them go to the same things. It's sort of the equivalent of when we think of our TV stations. We've got a Home and Garden TV. We've got a logo. We've got a uh-huh. sci-fi. We've got a Cartoon Network. But in the theater industry, so much of it's like, well, I just do good theater across all these boundaries. But I'd love it if there was just a horror-based theater. So if I know that you're the person who's going to stay up late at night watching B-movie horror movies, I can be like, this is the company you go to. You know, there's a company called The Hub Theater who I really, really enjoy. And they don't quite label themselves as this, but I've seen their work a lot where I can tell you, if you're into like Wes Anderson movies, if you go see indie comedies – that's where you should go. All of really? Their work is super storytelling based. It's a lot of nonlinear narratives. It's got this very kind of twee isn't the right, but like a, almost a corduroy feel, if that makes sense.
I know yeah, exactly I what you're talking about.
And yeah. It's all different kinds
that,
of
that kind of like that kind of like Royal Tenenbaums, yes. like you know, it's Life of Steve's or
Aquatic kind of feel. Zasu, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. His movies always had like this kind of theater-esque thing anyway. So yeah. like, yeah,
I you
see
know,
what you're saying.
And it's funny because at first I was never really a big fan, but like it grew on me.
It's as, the tailored, as an aesthetic. It's the tailored aesthetic that pulls you in.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so like, their content can be all sorts of stuff, but that aesthetic is pretty consistent.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that movie. I can't remember the name of it, but that hotel movie that he made,
Grand
Budapest Hotel. That yep. was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
and so we're your. We're your indie theater. You know, when yeah. you think of indie rock or you think of indie wrestling or indie films, we want to be that with a pop culture base.
That's
and that
awesome.
Leans heavily towards the geek realm, but also leans heavily just towards general pop culture ideas. And it really depends on – everything's just got to be something really personal for one of our artists. A yeah. good Flying V show is going to be taking stuff that you might reference because they're not all mashups. Some of the pop culture stuff isn't – that literal, a lot of it is. But for example, one of our shows that was really successful was a piece called You Are Whatever I Can Get. And it was a musical that was originally written by six of us, the four lead actors, myself as director and the musical director. And it was about the existential angst of dating and relationships in your late 20s and early 30s. So it wasn't contemporary in the sense that it was this is like Batman, but it was about people that we really know and really look at. So one of the big songs was called I'm 30, I'm Gonna Die Alone.
Hi.
Put your hat down.
Right, exactly.
That song's tailor-made for me.
Hello.
Congratulations. I just found my anthem.
Right. Well, and it was us putting stuff. There's there's one song in it called Last Sober Guy at the Party.
Hello.
Hi.
We just picked all these things that were real to us, and then we built the musical around that. We had these moments and events and sort of cultural touchstones to our lives and these fears that we had as people and these different characters. So there's one called Worst First Date in the World where we made up one date and we altered three, but the three stories in it are genuinely real first dates that three of us went through.
Oh.
And they're nightmarish and all completely different. So when you hear this musical, it's one of the things I'm most proud of that we've ever done. It's just very honest and very our generation. And I think it extends beyond, so it doesn't feel like a musical theater show like Oklahoma, but it still has all the structure and tenets of a musical theater show. So we do everything from the specific pop culture to the more general.
I would love to sit down and see some of these shows. Like, just like, because, you know, you were talking about having, like, you know, some of it recorded. Mm-hmm. I would love to sit down and watch, especially that. Just because, I don't know, like, there's definitely a chord that's striking with me about, like, some of these shows and just how you're describing them. Like, I really dig it.
All right, well, speaking of shows, so the main reason we brought you on is because you guys are opening a new show, and I want to hear more about it because it involves some of my favorite music, and that's Jonathan Colton's music. So tell me about your new show.
Absolutely. So we just opened on the 3rd, so when this drops, I'm not sure, but on the 3rd, we opened, and we're running until the 24th. It's called It's the Rest of the World That Looks So Small, a theatrical review of Jonathan Colton, where we've taken 20 different Jonathan Colton songs and put them together in a musical review.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two acts, and it's not a linear story. It's not like we turned it into a musical where there's one character that we're following and making all one story. It's a series of vignettes that are related by theme in this journey. And the theme for us is very much two questions. This idea of what if the entire world's heart broke all at once and then everything kept going? So what if the world and everyone in it somehow had their heart broken all at the same time? And then you still had to get up and go to work the next day. And it's this journey, hopefully emotionally, through the moment after to what happens there on sort of a dream level and a celestial level and a real life level about feeling broken and out of place and trying to connect with different people using all of these Jonathan Colton songs as these individual vignettes to explore that and kind of hopefully go on this journey. And I don't want to spoil it specifically. There's not really a plot to spoil, but the thematic journey is the idea of what if that – if the universe is destroyed but nothing is ever fully destroyed, what gets born when that happens? So if there's a part of us that dies when our heart is broken, what remains and what's created out of that experience?
Right.
And it's using his songs because – like I was saying, everything the Flying V does at its core is this intersection of high concept and intimate moment, and that's the core of what Jonathan Colton does too.
Right.
He takes these intimate questions and then sets them against these big high concept backdrops.
It sounds kind of like, you know, once, you know, like say it's like a mirror that crashes on the ground or whatever, and you have like all those pieces and like all this stuff that's brushed away that you just doesn't exist anymore. What can you restructure and rebuild out of those broken pieces?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, can you actually make something beautiful out of that or not?
Apt metaphor.
Yeah.
No, that's very much exactly what sort of the heart of it is. And it's done through really exploring this sort of dream logic is a big part of it. And then just with Jonathan Colton stuff, so much of his work takes place with the sci-fi metaphors, but also the sky and the sea. So we're really leaning into the idea of there's a real world that's happening, and then there's this sort of more dream space that is a combination of sort of the underwater and the outer space world.
Let me ask you a question. Are you going to be using Skullcrusher Island?
Skullcrusher Mountain is in the show. I can tell you that. Yep.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Is IKEA?
No. So IKEA is not.
IKEA.
It was the last one. It was the second to last one to get cut. Mm-hmm. So in the lead up of listening to this show, Vaughn Irving and I, he's my co-director of the show, we listened to every single song Jonathan Colton ever recorded. We went through the entirety of his website.
Which is nuts because he did a song a day.
Yes.
He literally did a song a day.com.
We listened to every single one of them, and we like kept these notes and wrote these things, and we sort of had to decide which way we were going to do the show. We were going to try for something a little bit more than just a musical review and have a theme and
really try and make it into more of a cohesive experience, or also super valid, where we're just going to pick our favorite Jonathan Coulton songs and just do fun, goofy vignettes. Right.
Yeah, because that just seems like the easy thing to do and knock off.
I feel like you could do both, to be honest with you.
Sure.
And I think what we've landed is pretty much both, except that it meant that some of the songs that we liked didn't fit because they weren't in that theme and in that journey.
Got
so
it.
IKEA was one that we had really – we were holding on to for quite a while
because
the treatments, basically each of them ended up having something that we call a treatment for it. So what is this going to look like? How is it going to be staged? What is the – is it going to be a puppet piece? Is it going to be a dance piece or what have you? So the treatment for IKEA was actually – for a while, that it was all about a homeless dude who turned out to be Thor that was singing the song. But it just didn't quite work. And then we also thought about filming a music video at IKEA where it would just be all the weird characters walking around the store without us telling them that we were going to do it and like filming them all doing that stuff. And that we didn't have time for.
Oh.
So IKEA's not, unfortunately.
No, and that's fine because, I mean, Jonathan Coulton has so many good songs. I just remember IKEA being like one of my faves. So. All right, so – and I asked you this before, and we started to talk about it, but then we started recording. So the process – I mean, because obviously Jonathan Coulton's one of those big names, in especially in pop culture. I don't want to, like, define the nerd rock.
No, but he is totally, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not just strictly rock. I mean, he does that. He does folk music, electronic music. I mean, he covers a large array of musical styles and genres, and so – but – I got to ask, so the procedure – I would assume that the procedure of getting these licenses would be extremely difficult, but you're saying it wasn't.
No. One of the awesome things about Jonathan Coulton is almost all of his work, with I think the exception of the stuff he did for Portal, because that's owned by
Valve.
Bethesda, by Valve. Sorry, yeah. Everything else is under a Creative Commons license. So we reached out to him when we realized we wanted to do this show. And we asked about getting the rights, and we talked to his people and his assistant, Scarface. And Scarface got back to us and was like, so, you know, what is this project? What is it going to be? And we explained what we were, and we said we're a nonprofit theater, and we sent over a budget, and they looked at it, and they kind of laughed. They're like, oh, yeah, you can use this for free.
Okay.
Just go ahead and credit it. Because we're a nonprofit company and as an artistic project. So it was the easiest rights ever. They were super sweet. Jonathan just tweeted us the other day.
I saw that.
Wishing us well. He can't make it, unfortunately, but that's really cool. And so they have been nothing but awesome to work with, and we're going to film it and obviously send it to him to see, and hopefully he'll enjoy it.
That was one of my questions. I was itching too. It's the process of taking something and then meshing it into your original, you know, originality to it, and how that works. Because it's one thing you do like Hamlet, and it's like you have to get the rights to that screenplay to do it at that theater, but then it's also, you know, getting something, but then it's not just directly, you know, aiming it towards.
There's so many different parts of the process to, like, sum it up to the smallest. First, we had to figure out the theme.
Yeah.
And then we had to figure out structure. So it was sort of, okay, what do each of these songs mean for us in this journey? And then literally what is going to happen in each of these songs?
Mm-hmm.
And which of the ones are we going to do kind of literally? And those ones, okay, how are we going to do them in a way that's fun and interesting so it's not just hearing the future soon, you know, and doing literally that.
Gotcha.
But you're not going to do that in a big different way. That is a story that you have to tell, as opposed to, for example, Today with Your Wife, which I don't know if you guys know that song. It's off Artificial Heart. It was haunting and beautiful when I listened to it. And if you go online, there's 13, 14 different theories about what that song means. So it came about, what is it that we think it means? And that one ended up being one of the most personal pieces for me, where for me, after listening to this song, which it starts with, I had a great time today with your wife under an awning. We had to stop there, wait for a while because it was raining. We talked about you until the storm had passed through. You should have been there. You should have been there. And it's this conversation about this time that this guy had with this guy's wife, and it always keeps going with, you should have been there. So we had to break down what we were going to do with it. And finally it became, for me, I made it a duet. And it was at a gravesite. And it was the story of a best friend and a wife who, after the person has passed away, have started to have feelings for each other, but they're not acting on it because they still feel obligated to the relationship with the person who passed away.
Oh.
So it's the two of them singing separately to the gravestone, basically not really talking about it, but kind of talking about it until you get to this moment where it's the moment that they would have kissed and they stopped, and it's all about them deciding whether or not they're going to go continue living their life
when that means letting go of this person and whether or not that's okay. And that was a really important story for me because I'm getting to that age where I think about mortality all the time. That's right. Actually sort of my big thing as an artist.
Dude, you're going to make me cry.
That's part of the goal.
I'm just like,
if you heard that noise, deep. That's literally the sound of my heart rending in two.
And this particular one, I hope, and Sweetly, where it's sort of like there's a moment in the song where the clowns burned away into a warm, sunny day. And we sort of felt like that was the moment that they both felt like they had the permission. And that the sadness is more about the fact that they're going to move forward. This means that this person's really dead. That as long as they're living with a certain level of obligation that they don't have to, it means that person's still kind of in their life in the same role.
Right.
And accepting this new thing, which is not wrong but is complicated, is a moment.
Because, yeah,
these are all human emotions.
Right. It's like at what point do you almost kind of have to forget about them to be able to continue on with something new?
Exactly.
That's oh god, oh man.
But in terms of your process question, so the first part of that is you listen to the song like 100 times and you go, I think this is about something and I don't know what it is and we gotta figure it out. For me, what got me was, because it could have been about a divorce too. You know, like when you just listen to the song, it could be you should have been there. It could have been like, you're an idiot. Why are you not with your family? Why are you not with your kids? So you got to make an interpretation. There's a bridge in the song that says, stupid car stuck in the road, getting home too late to go. I'm not saying anything. I just thought you'd want to know. And I decided that the narrative of this piece was going to be nonlinear. It was going to be the two of them talking about this moment that they had, not really talking about what really happened, and then for 1 second both actually starting to tell the story of this night where he's visited her, stupid car, so there's a snowstorm, stupid car stuck in the snow, getting home, nope, too late to go. They start, and so when they come together, they start to almost kiss, and they're saying it to themselves, I'm not saying anything, and then they both turn back to the grave, just thought you'd want to know. And it's about how they can't really still talk about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you figure out – so first decision is this going to be a duet or is this going to be a solo? We make it a duet. That changes in and of itself. Is it going to be a conversation or two monologues? It's kind of two monologues in parallel. What's going to be the imagery of it? Okay, we're going to try and strip this down as much as possible. Our set's fucking huge. This is the biggest thing I've ever directed on ever. It's got a 20-foot revolve that spins, an upstairs platform that's 12 feet high in the air with like 7 foot long and these long stairways and stuff. So we're like, okay, it would be a beautiful image if the two of them are separated as far as possible but high in the air on these two step units, and that's part of it. And then there's a gravestone at the bottom. So when they come together by the end, it's the two of them finally talking together at this gravesite. And then you think about musically, how do you want this to be? What's the instrumentation going to be like? We have a 5-piece band for this show, and our music director is pretty amazing. So it's thinking about the arrangement. So for this one, it's almost all strings because we have a cello, we have a violin, we have a guitar, a drum set, and a piano. So this one's mainly piano and strings. You know, you do that one, whereas with Future Soon, for example, we went in the direction of doing it more like an emo song. So it's super electric guitar and and it's figuring out for each of these different pieces what's going to be the heart of it. Like, what is this story really about? Mm-hmm. So in that case, it's like, this story is for me about choosing to live your life past the people who die before you and how complicated a decision it is to choose to keep living in a world where people you care about have died. With Future Soon, it was sort of a question of, we love that song, but 10 years later, in a world of you know, Me Too and different things, that I'm going to force you to marry me because you don't love me doesn't read quite as happy in the same way anymore.
Yeah.
So we had to actually have the character realize that midway through, so it can start really fun and whimsical and it's still got all that fun. And then when it gets to that place, instead of just ending, it's actually the character realizing what he's saying and having to take a step back and kind of almost comment on it itself from that perspective. So,
right.
Yowza.
Yeah.
I got to ask that. So this is, and this sort of show is indicative of what you guys do. So, God, that's pretty powerful stuff.
It's also a lot of fun and funny things.
No, like, no.
Mr. Fancy Pants is in it, just so you know.
Cool. All right. No, I just – I mentioned that just because, again, it, like you said, it's taking a generally accepted piece of pop culture, but marrying it with a high concept to sort of get it out there and get people drawn in. Mm-hmm. And like, again, I don't know, for those of you watching the tape, you're obviously going to see Brian and I, as he's describing this, we're like, what? I was like, oh, my heart. No, but so obviously you have this show, and this is running till the 24th of February?
Yeah, 24th of February. We do shows Thursday through Monday at this point. So it's 8 p.m. evenings, then Saturday and Sunday both have 3:30 shows as well.
And this is at the Black Box Theater in Silver Spring, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so
– tickets available at flyingv.brownpapertickets.com.
Thank you. That just saved us a plug. All right, there we go. So – all right, but the next question is – so obviously this is the show running right now. So what's in the future? What – because you had Brother Mario. That was the first show you pitched to us. And then this show, which I'm even more excited. I mean, Brother Mario was such an interesting concept. I was so excited about that. And then I heard this one. I was like, oh, my God, JoCo is my jam. I want to get in on this. So I'm definitely coming to this show. But I got to ask the question. So what's coming up next?
So in order for the rest of this year at the very least, the big projects are at AwesomeCon, we'll be premiering a staged reading of a brand new show that'll have never had been read or premiered before. That's what we did with Brother Mario 2 years ago. So we started as a staged reading, and it was so successful that then we turned it into a full production.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be sort of like a test run. So if you're at AwesomeCon, you'll get a chance to try out something new that might go forward or not.
Score.
And that's called Waiting for Waldo, and it's sort of a mix of Beckett's Waiting for Godot and the Where's Waldo, about Waldo and Carmen Sandiego waiting for somebody. And
I know, right?
Sort of not like in my head. It's this is an idea that I sort of had, and I passed off to one of our writers because I thought he'd be a great person for it. So I'm curious to see where he goes with it. I actually haven't read the. I'm waiting on the first draft right now. But if I think I know where it's going, it's a lot about Waldo having an existential crisis about the fact that everybody wants to know where he is, but nobody wants to know who he is.
I can
hop on board.
Seriously, I don't know about you, but like as soon as you described that to me, the first time you described that to me right before we started recording, I was like, what if the person they're waiting for is the reader who actually finds them?
Oh, I don't know. That would be good.
No, but
from what I understand, Inspector Gadget is somehow in there as well.
Oh, yes.
It's all characters who like deal with finding or missing things and stuff like that.
I love it.
In April, we're going to be having our second ever Awesomeathon, which is a 24-hour festival of Flying V work. We haven't really finalized any of the details yet. So the only thing I can tell you, the one thing I do know that we're going to be doing, I think, the whole thing is going to go from like 10 p.m. to 10 p.m. from like a Saturday night to a Sunday. So it's 24-hour stuff with all sorts of things. I believe that the plan is, again, not official, but this is the one I'm in charge of, so I think I can say it, is that at midnight we're going to try and do Dark Knight After Dark, which is going to be sort of erotic vignettes about Batman and Batman characters.
Okay. Yeah, there you go, Brian.
I'm pointing at him. There you go, Brian. Batman be his jam.
It's true.
There you go.
Batman. Yeah. I think I'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then our big next main stage show is going to be in the fall. We're still working on the dates, but it's a play called Sheila and Moby, and it's very lightly a riff on – you know, maybe a very famous cartoon or comic strip that has to do with a boy and his stuffed tiger. But instead of a boy and his stuffed tiger, it's a young girl and her stuffed Iberian lynx. And she's all grown up and is living a sort of corporate life when she receives a call from a young girl in her neighborhood who's found some of her old private eye flyers. Because this young girl, her stuffed koala has been kidnapped and she needs to have this private eye solve this crime. So she comes home to have one last adventure with her former best friend, the Iberian lynx, she put away when she went to college and hasn't seen since. And it's a whole piece that's really a meditation on what you give up when you grow up and whether it's worth it, and about parenting and how you raise your children and stuff like
that. As soon as you said a child and his stuffed tiger, you had me sold. So. Yeah. But the description made it even better. So see, and this is what I'm talking about. Because obviously, as soon as you mentioned the pop culture element, you've already got people who are in the know hooked. But then you describe the story, and they're like, wow, that sounds really awesome. So even if they're not hooked by the pop culture element, you've got them with the story, and they're like intrigued. So it's, oh, that's so good.
I'm really happy to hear that. And then we have some long-term projects that are in development for the next couple years. So we have a wrestling based one that we're working on called Twin Hearts Beat to Be the Best, which is sort of a mix of professional wrestling and feudal fantasy in Japan.
Does it have anything to do with the Hart brothers?
No and yes. The roughest thing is that it's a world where there's these four city-states that each have a different style of – so it's a world where professional wrestling is almost sort of the samurai class. They're this sort of warrior class of wandering warriors that function as sort of celebrities, policemen, and superhero in kind of a weird way. And there's four different city states: the northern city, the southern city, the eastern city, and the west, and the center city. Center city based on America, the eastern city based on Japan, the southern city based on Mexico, and the northern city being sort of a hybrid of Canada and England to sort of pick the hotbeds of professional wrestling.
Right.
Each of them are going to have their own style. So basically, it's going to be the technical style in the north, strong style in Japan, lucha. And then America's going to be like suplexes, that very sort of, you know, the Steiner brothers kind of feel. And the idea is that it's about these two young women who have been raised, who've been being trained in secret by the greatest of all of these samurai class. This is super far out, so you guys are getting like, this won't be done until like 2020.
Right.
But it's basically that they've been being trained at this secret kung fu school for girls when their trainer is murdered. And it's a patriarchal society, so there's like these two young women who have to rise up not only to avenge their trainer and fight like their rivalry against each other, but also sort of the patriarchal system. And it's a metaphor for the modern day women's evolution in professional wrestling. And the story is really built on this idea of what does it mean to be the best? Is being the best being the best of yourself, or is it beating everybody else? Mm-hmm. And how does that weigh? So every one of our shows has some kind of like that core question. It's sort of a, like, what does it mean to be the best? What is it like to face your own death? With Mario, Brother Mario, which was this existential mashup of Super Mario Brothers and Chekhov, it was all about depression to an extent, but it was really a show that asked, what if you don't like doing what you do anymore, but that's what defines you? You know, being Mario is literally all Mario has. And
right.
And in the show, he just wants to be a plumber again.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not good at plumbing. And that's a really sad moment.
Wow.
It's the funny thing is that, you know, when we first talked about it, I only heard some of this stuff. Like, I heard about Brother Mario, and I heard it was in the works, the Joko show. So, and now that I'm hearing more, I'm just like, why have I not? I want more.
Well, we'd love to have you guys. We'd love to have everybody listening. I mean, the biggest thing for us is, the struggle, obviously, is that if you're making theater for a group of people who are not inclined to think of theater as the way they go to. So it's, how do you get in front of people in their home? It's why we do AwesomeCon. It's, you know, these are personal invitations. It's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to come here, because you guys, theoretically, and if we're doing a good enough job, anybody listening to this podcast are our audience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about the theater people that like us. It's about being the theatrical wing of all these other loves and all these other hobbies, and seeing how that can be extended. Mm-hmm. So the more that we can become part of those communities, I mean, because that's the big thing for me is I want a fan base. I don't want just an audience. I want to have Flying V fans. And that's what we're looking to build.
And hopefully we can help with that. So if you're interested in finding any information about Flying V, you can go to www.flyingvtheater.com. And obviously, it's the rest of the world that looks so small. A theatrical review of Jonathan Colton is now running at the Black Box Theater in Silver Spring, Maryland until February the 24th. How much are tickets?
It depends on the night. They range from 20 to 40, depending on if it's a Thursday or Sunday matinee or Saturday afternoon, or if it's a Friday or Saturday night. And then we also have two industry night tickets on two Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put in the code AwesomeIndustry, all cap, you can get the special $15 tickets for those Monday nights.
Oh, cool. Nice. Interesting.
You heard it here first.
Well, I mean, Jason, I have to thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, again, obviously, you know, you guys do great work, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm totally hyped for this show. I want to see it.
Oh, thank you guys for having me so much on this. I really appreciate it, and this is awesome, and you guys are all great. And It's super cool that you guys have this new studio. I don't know if you've told them that.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. We,
this is really awesome.
We might have let them know about that.
Yeah.
Every episode, we're just like, look at this place.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
well,
it's not
look
my,
at this
no.
stuff.
Thank
Isn't
you so
neat?
Much.
No, I, no we really appreciate it.
My collection's complete.
But, no, it's always great because the one unifier, especially when we're talking about stuff, is like there's always that genuine love of film or television. It's popular media is the great unifier.
Yes.
In society. And again, whether you're podcasting or as a filmmaker or you're doing theater, it's
you could boil that down to just like we love stories.
Exactly. There you go. That's the perfect way to put it.
And for us here, you know, this only works if you have been here for a while. So but like in terms of whatever your other background, whatever your other culture, if you have been an American for a long enough time, just in terms of literally just living here, I'm not talking about any identity politics. I'm just saying if you have lived here for a certain amount of time, our shared culture is pop culture. It bridges so many divides because mm-hmm. it's the thing that we all experience together.
Yep. Yep.
And whatever other your background, everything, everyone's heard of Superman. Everyone's mm-hmm. heard of Batman. Everyone has associations with stuff. So for us, it's this weird mix of taking these concepts that everybody knows from pop culture and then personalizing or anthropomorphizing these sort of larger life concepts like death or other things and turning them into characters as well, like Sandman does in mm-hmm. the comics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And when you take a blend of those ideas, that's when you get this sort of existential pop culturism.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, Jason, again, I want to thank you for coming on the show. And again, if you're interested, flyingvtheater.com for any information about the shows. Guys, honestly, I mean, that interview was so intense. I don't honestly have anything else. I don't think anything else is going to top that.
Nope. It's pretty – no. Dallas, do you have anything?
Nope.
I'm speechless.
Nope.
I'm speechless.
Speechless, yeah, which is pretty difficult on a podcast to become speechless.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so we want to thank Jason Schlafsky for coming on. Yes, I got it right. Okay. Yeah. No, it's – I literally am always concerned because like I have one of those names that's just difficult to pronounce. So I'm always worried that you know I'm going to mispronounce –
Even the computer didn't pronounce it right when I tried to type it in.
Oh, absolutely not.
It tried to autocorrect. It was like, no.
It's like, do you mean Schlegel? I'm like, no.
So super briefly, just because it's on this, for years during the beginning of Google, I used to Google myself to see if there was anything. And it would always say, do you mean Jason – Schlefstein? And I was like, no, I fucking don't. I mean Jason Schlefstein. And then I don't remember the first day that I put it in and it didn't ask me. And I was like, I beat you. I beat you, Schlefstein. Now it's all Schlefstein. I'm the Google man. I just imagine that poor Jason Schlefstein somewhere. Oh. Like, I used to be the top of the search. So,
I used to be the Google man.
Yeah, exactly. I once had a Google rug, but it's so regenerated that this damn kid made all this theater.
I'm just imagining some 60-year-old man staring at a computer just being like, I used to be the Google man.
I'm Jason Schlefstein.
I love it. Okay. Well, thank you for listening to Boldly Going Nowhere. And again, Flying V Theater for any of your pop culture theater needs. Until next time, I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
Jason Schlafstein.
Brian Massey.
Dallas White.
And you've been Boldly Going Nowhere. Sean, hit me with the outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.